CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, I believe we're outside the solar system with Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black, and we're headed to V'ger, Voyager 2, and engineering always comes up with a solution. Bob, a very good evening to you. Voyager 2 is restored. How so? Good evening to you.
It's not so much that it's restored, but the engineering science team at Voyager 2 have improvised, have worked out a way to try to extend its mission an extra year or two. We have to understand that there's a limit to how much engineers can do. They're really good sometimes, but there's a limit. Voyager 2 and Voyager 1 both were launched in the late 70s using what they call RTG power supplies. They're basically nuclear power. It's a radioisotope that gives off heat, and that is used to produce electricity. And the same thing Curiosity and Perseverance use. And so it's very long-lasting. And they had anticipated that these things would last about 50 years of power. But what happens is very slowly the power levels go down, very slowly. And this has been the case. But because the other instruments on the both Voyagers have generally been functioning, those both spacecraft have been functioning for the 45-some-odd years since launch. However, as time is passing, they've got to shut down certain things because they don't have as much power. And the focus has been trying to keep the instruments functioning. And so engineers have now worked out a system to use what they call the backup sat power supply to basically extend the life of the spacecraft so that the instruments can function longer than planned. The idea is that they're going to start turning off instruments in the next year or so and hold on to some so they can work at least one instrument for as long as possible, but they're going to have to start turning off some instruments. With this improvisation, they can avoid turning anything off for a longer period of time, and that's essentially where we are. The truth is that the computer on both Voyagers are the most, the longest living continuously operated computers ever in the history of human race. They've been working steadily, continuously for 45 plus years, and they continue to work. And so do all the instruments. In fact, except for one instrument on Voyager 1, everything still works on both spacecraft. It's really a miracle of a great engineering and design back in the mid-70s.
And Bob,
so that's the plan.
Interstellar space. I remember there being a controversy about whether the V'gers were or were not outside. They're now confirmed to be outside. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have been confirmed to be outside in interstellar space for a while. What happens is that the heliosphere of the solar system, the heliosphere is the sphere of area which is dominated by the solar wind of the sun. And at a certain point, that solar wind gets far enough out that the interstellar winds match it, and that becomes what they call the heliosheath, which is the edge, the sphere, the edge of the solar system. And both spacecraft have gone through the heliosheath about, I don't know, sometime around 6-7 years ago, and they're out in interstellar space. So they'd like to keep them alive as long as possible because they're getting data on the environment of interstellar space, essentially. That's the goal.
We move to a mystery. Well, it was a mystery. Maybe Bob can solve it for me. And that is, we're looking at something that is called a fast radio burst. It's very deep into the cosmos, and they've now discovered a whole lot of more fast radio bursts, but my memory, Bob, is that it was unsolved. Is it still unsolved?
It's still unsolved. Radio bursts are one of those mysteries of astronomy that has not been solved. There's not very many known. There's probably less than 100 total have been detected. They are in the radio frequencies, so only radio telescopes grab them. And it's basically a quick burst of radio energy, and they don't even know how far away they are or what produces them. They have up until recently, they have discovered about 25 of them that repeat. It's the same spot. You see another burst later on. Well, using a radio telescope in Canada, astronomers have now doubled the number of repeating fast radio bursts. They now have no 50 that repeat. And, of course, this is good data which can be used to try to learn more about them, especially the repeating ones, because with repeating ones, you know a burst is going to happen, you can predict it, and so you can turn other telescopes in other wavelengths at that spot, and hopefully you can detect some emission when the burst happens, and in all the wavelengths. And especially if you get it in the optical, you can then use the redshift of the optical to determine how far away that burst was. And that's critical to try and understand what this is, because is it close, is it far? We don't know. So it's a mystery, but now we have a better chance of solving it, John.
NASA has a balloon circling, what is this, around Antarctica in 10 days? That's the mission?
Yeah, well, the mission actually isn't to circle Antarctica, but circling Antarctica is to allow them to do the mission. They've done lots of balloons in Antarctica in the past, high-altitude balloons. They call this the super pressure balloon, and it's designed to fly for a very long time at high altitudes, but it's got on it a telescope that can be aimed at astronomical objects, and it's an experiment to see if you can do this kind of work inexpensively, cheaply, high above the atmosphere, without a satellite, without a ground-based telescope that limits it. So it can do wide-field views of objects in space that are very sharp, much sharper than anything can be done on the ground. And so they've flown this now for 10 days, and it's still going. It's now actually beginning to move across South America as it continues its orbits around Antarctica. And as it does so, it takes pictures. I have links on the page to two really beautiful images of the Tarantula Nebula and the Antennae Galaxy that the equipment on this balloon has taken. It's quite good. NASA has shut down its Sophia airplane that had a telescope in it to get it up in the air because it really wasn't very efficient. A balloon like they've been doing this kind of work with balloons from the earliest days of the space age in the early 60s. There's no reason why astronomers can't do this and obtain better data and cheaper data than you would with gigantic ground-based telescopes, John.
An asteroid called Phaethon behaves oddly. It has a tail. What's the explanation, Bob?
Up until now, the theories had been possibly it was a dead comet that had a little bit of ice and dust in it that produced the tail. But astronomers using solar instruments, orbiting solar telescopes that can look at the sun, because it's close to the sun, and when it gets closer to the sun, it produces this tail. They use the filters on those solar telescopes to look at it, and what they discovered is that the filters that should show dust showed nothing, but the filters that showed sodium showed the tail, which means that this tail is not made of dust, but it's made of sodium, which suggests that this asteroid is not a former comet, it's an asteroid, but it's a strange asteroid, and they need to know more about it. This technique itself could allow astronomers to discover a lot more asteroids inside the orbit of Earth. It's hard to do those with optical telescopes because the sun is so close. But if you can use solar telescopes to look in this direction and detect asteroids, that allows you to get a better census of the asteroids that exist in the solar system, John.
Bob depends on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter for really cool pictures of the surface of Mars and make Mars look like Imagination Plus. However, there's one instrument that is now shutting down, the CRISM. What was its purpose, Bob?
CRISM, it was the instrument on Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter that detected infrared light coming from the surface. And they used it to map the surface for minerals and ice underground. However, to do infrared observations, you need a cryocooler. You need to cool things down so that it can detect the infrared light and not see optical and other kinds of things. And after a while, the cryptocoolers run out of gas and can't work anymore. And so CRISM has basically been finishing up its work, making two global maps of Mars, looking for water-related minerals, and next it's going to be the next map will show iron deposits. Now those maps have been made, so they've now shut the instrument down. This doesn't mean everything else is functioning, the imagery is functioning, but they no longer have the infrared, but they've got global maps instead, John.
Cool image. We're looking at the surface of Mars, and Bob is looking at what he describes as waves. Waves of what? What made this, Bob?
This is what I call a frozen waves and waterfall of lava. This is a spot on Mars with lots of lava. It's in the dry equatorial regions. Most lava on Mars produces very smooth, flat floodplains because on Mars, lava flows more like water, but it's not as viscous. But in this particular spot, it appears that the floodplain lava was flowing down to fill a fissure. And so as it did so, that lava got churned up. And as it froze, it churned up. And you could see basically the frozen waves and churning and waterfall of this lava as it filled this fissure. That's what we're looking at, John. In other words, Mars is alien, Mars is strange. That's the bottom line.
And, Bob, there's a killer fog coming to replace the killer global warming?
No, global warming is going to cause killer fog. That's what this really ridiculous study says. Global warming, they say, is going to make the polar ice caps get smaller, especially in the Arctic, which means ships can go through. Wow, that's an advantage. We can do better shipping. Oh, no, we can't say anything positive about global warming. So now scientists have said, well, it's going to increase fog, so those ships could crash into ice because they can't see anything. In other words,
is it a killer fog? Is it going to kill us, or is it just...
No, it's going to kill ships because they won't be able to see what they're doing.
Okay.
And in other words, it's just the negativity of the global warming crowd just irritates me no end. No matter what results you get, it's going to kill us, and it's Chicken Little screaming at the sky.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going space engineering, SpaceX next. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Rash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.